Welcome into Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. My name is Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham. You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio at Jeremy Branham. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. This is tequila that's natural, unfiltered, best made with 100% blue agave and totally additive free. You can find it near you at BlueStarTequila.com. We got a lot to talk about today. The Houston Astros, obviously, the offense is moving in the right direction. We'll talk about the injuries that keep on plaguing this team. And we'll take a look at Chandler Rome's quarter of the century all Houston Astros team and see where Jeremy Branham disagrees with him the most. Start with Jose Altuve. He's heating up, Jeremy. He's heating up. He's looking good. Going into Thursday's game, he was hitting, or going into Wednesday's game, sorry, 28 at-bats, 14 hits, 4 home runs, 8 runs scored, 7 RBIs, only 2 strikeouts. Jose Altuve is back.
Yeah, I like how you said RBIs. A big fan of that.
That's how you're supposed to say it.
It is, according to an MLA and AP rule.
Yes.
Yeah, it is how you say it. I agree. Yeah, he's really good. Jose Altuve is one of the best offensive second basemen of all time. Was struggling, not really to start the year. It was like after the first 2 weeks. Like, he started pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, first week or two, I can't remember how long. And then he went into a major slump, you know. And it made people wonder, and myself included, like, is Father Time catching up to Jose Altuve? And, look, it might be. He could just be on a heater. Like, we'll see where his numbers end up. I don't think it was as bad as it was whenever he was in a slump. I mean, the numbers were bad. I didn't think he was as bad as that low point. And obviously, like, this weak stretch that he's in, like, that's not sustainable over the course of a year. So I'm still very curious to see where his numbers stack up at the end of the season. But he at least shows that he has this in him. Like, he shows his upside is still amazingly high. So that's good, because, I mean, it means that one of the offensive players that you were counting on still has it in him.
Well, I think it's the reality. It's like, at this age, there's going to be times where it starts slow. There's going to be maybe longer slumps than we're accustomed to with a guy like Jose Altuve. I think, for the most part, like, people just need to breathe a little bit with Altuve. Like, there's never a reason to panic. For me, at least, like, it's not Christian Walker. It's not Jose Abreu. We'll talk about Christian Walker here in a little bit. But, like, overall, like, right now, Jose Altuve has shown nothing that he is slowing down to the point of real honest, I would say, concern. Like, yes,
I mean, slowing down. Hot streak he was.
But, like, I don't think, like, you're at the point where, like, you're worried he's going to be that for a whole season.
Based on the hot streak that he's currently on?
No, just based on it's going to balance out over time. Like, I don't think we're at a decline to the end of the Miguel Cabrera era for the Tigers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're close to that at this point. Is it always going to be what it's been in recent memory? No, I don't think so. But, like, I don't think we're close to the end of the Jose Altuve as a very good baseball player era. You disagree?
No, I don't disagree. The baseball player thing is interesting that you said that instead of offensive player.
Okay.
Because his defense is a liability. So, like, that's something that you can throw into the equation if I nitpick what you're saying. Now, if you're talking specifically offensively, no, I think he has a lot left in the tank. I don't think it's Miguel Cabrera in the final year of his deal or anything like that. I guess it depends on, like, what the bar is and what we're talking about. Like, and it's very easy to have this, you know, Jose Altuve, he's the GOAT, and he's the best ever during a hot streak. Like, there's a very real chance that this is the best 2 weeks Jose Altuve is going to have this year. Jose Altuve is still a negative war player early in this week.
Mm.
So, like, if you're talking full totality of the player, I think it's a different conversation than the offensive player. He has shown us that he still has it in him offensively, to where he is not a hindrance in the lineup. And in a long way from that. Like, he's a top of the order hitter still. Is somebody that can get hot and carry a team for a little while. No, I agree with that. But for how much longer? I don't know.
I don't know. That's fair. Like, I don't know how long he's going to be like the player of the Altuve caliber that at this point you expect him to be. It's hard to know. I mean, we see players drop off at an older age in baseball very dramatically. Like, it doesn't feel like there is ever a real smooth transition from great player to bad player. It feels like you go from great to good to disaster.
Yeah, usually
I don't feel like there's
fast.
Much of an in-between.
No, usually it's almost like overnight at times. It's like all of a sudden, oh, it's gone. And I, it probably speaks to the margins being so thin in baseball, to where if you have any ounce of slippage, then it's like, okay, everybody's going to expose you. And look, again, we're not talking about Altuve being near that point. And hopefully with Altuve, it's more gradual. Mm-hmm. You know, like I saw him earlier this week compared to Biggio a bit in terms of their last few years, because Altuve's chasing 3,000 and all of these things. Like, Biggio had a pretty gradual last few years where he was pretty good, too. Like, he was pretty good all of the final years up until the final one. So hopefully Altuve ages like that, mm-hmm. as opposed to Jose Abreu, for instance. Yeah. And I think he will. I think Altuve will be more of a gradual thing.
I actually think Abreu's is a little more gradual than we saw. I think the home run power that we ignored that went away from him in Chicago before he got to Houston was more of a sign that I think we like were led to really believe. It felt like it was more of a, I think we blamed it more on the White Sox.
What's
maybe
weird.
Of what they did versus what happened here. And I think once he got here, we got hit with a hard reality.
Are you a baseball savant guy?
It depends.
See, I'm a pretty big baseball savant guy because I like to know the reason for things.
Sure.
Like Jeremy Peña, why is he having a better year this year? And a lot of times it could be fluke. A lot of times it could be random. It could be BABIP. Like, oh, he's got a 400 BABIP when his normal BABIP is 280. Like, so a lot of times it can be randomness. But if you look at somebody like Peña, he has made a lot of strides in a positive direction to chase percentage. Like, he's still not great at it. He's still, like, in the 25th percentile. But last year and every single year prior, he was like in the 8th percentile.
Yeah.
So he has made a tremendous improvement from where he used to be to where he is now. Still below big league average, but a tremendous improvement for where his bar was at. And now you see his numbers start to climb. And I bring that up because Jose Abreu in his final year with the White Sox, he didn't have the home run numbers, but everything else looked good. Like hard hit, barrel, chase, strikeout rate, walk rate. Like he looked good. So that's the weird thing. Like, the home runs were gone, but everything else was good. And I was like, okay, that's going to be fine. And then that disappeared. If you like Baseball Savant, don't look up Jose Altuve, though, because Baseball Savant doesn't really like Altuve.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with, like, in terms of, like, the baseball nerdy stuff, Baseball Savant and barrel rates and everything like that. I'm very picky, and I pick and choose what I like.
Why?
I understand what the barrel rates and some of the numbers tell me for Jake Myers, for example, this year.
Yeah.
But am I ready to buy back into Jake Myers? No. Because you put it out on your Twitter account, at Jerry B. Branham. Mm-hmm. You know, the comparisons by date and by at bat of where he was in 2024 versus 2025. And yes, I see the Baseball Savant numbers and everything are much improved. But I also have seen the same baseball player for the most part for the better part of, what, 4 years now. So, like, I'm not totally all in yet. I think for a younger player and for an older player, I am more likely to buy in. For those middle-of-the-road guys like a Jake Myers, I'm a little more hesitant to buy into what the numbers are saying. Even for someone like Jeremy Peña, like, I want to see it play out over a longer sample size, even though he's still young, technically, before I, like, really buy into, like, what the numbers are saying. I don't live and die by the numbers, because I just don't believe, like, that's baseball at its core still.
Yeah, I disagree with a lot of what you said.
That's fine. That's fine.
A couple of things, like, define young.
In, like, less than 4 pro seasons or 5 pro seasons.
Okay, that's not really youth. That's more when did you get called up then.
Yes, that's what I mean by youth, is when you got called up, I guess.
So, I mean, if Ronel Blanco got, what, his big league debut at, like, 30, 31?
He's young by baseball standards.
Okay.
He's only a pro for a certain amount of time.
All right, I fundamentally disagree with that.
Why?
You're defined based on your youth is defined based on your service time?
You're a young pro baseball player.
As opposed to how many times you've been around the earth?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, just disagree there. I mean, Peña and Myers only have a 2-year difference. And they've probably came up around the same time. I mean, Peña's first year was the year that Correa left, so that was 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then Myers came up, was it 21 when Myers made his big league debut?
I believe
21.
So. Yeah.
And then he hurt his, you know, he played in 49 games, got hurt in the playoffs. So, like, there's not a big difference there. Like, Myers came up a year earlier and is 2 years older. So why is Peña young and Myers is not? Is that the gap that thin?
I think in baseball it can be.
Okay.
I don't think they're that different, though, in terms of, like, their successes and failures and struggles. Like, I don't think, specifically with those two guys, I don't think they're that different. Like, I look at the baseball numbers and this baseball savant numbers. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, like, what is Pena doing? What is Myers doing? How does it look? Do I believe what's in front of me?
Yeah.
Yes or no? Versus a Cam Smith, I'll trust more of baseball savant because he just got to the pros. Like, what is, and we've seen him. He's turned it around in a major way offensively. He's doing very well in terms of, like, runs above, runs saved in the outfield right now. Like, I'm more of a believer in the positive numbers or the negative numbers when you're young. Like, when you're just to the bigs, I guess is the way to put it.
I mean, I believe in player development. Like, I believe in players getting better, especially players that have good work ethic, right? And Pena strikes me as a player who has good work ethic. Like, you can tell he lives in the gym. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell that he cares about his production and all that stuff. The only real change that Pena has made this year is that he's laying off bad pitches at a higher rate. Still not even like a good, like good relative to the rest of the league, but an improvement for him. Like, his chase percentage is tremendously better than where it's been, which, if you're swinging a good pitch, is, I think that elevates everything else. You're swinging a good pitch, which is Ted Williams' rule number one of hitting. Get a good pitch to hit. So that's going to send his average numbers up because he's swinging a better pitch. He's not going to get himself out. He's going to walk more. He's probably going to hit for more power because he's going to make contact with better pitches as opposed to pitches out of the zone. And then when you look at Myers is more about what I sense. And, like, it's kind of, like, I think the analytics back up the eye test here, is I feel like Myers is, for lack of a better way of saying this, swinging for the fences less. Like, he actually slugged better at this point last season than he did right now. Like, he had more home runs. His slugging percentage was way higher. You look at some of the baseball savant stuff where that backs it up, where his contact rate is going up, but, like, his barrel rate isn't as much. His chase rate's a little bit better, too. So I think, to like sum it up with Myers and why I do think it's tangible-ish. Like, I don't think Myers is a 300 hitter. I don't think Myers is like an 800 OPS guy. But why I think he could be improved for where he has been in the past is I do think that he is making an effort to try to make contact more and is sacrificing power to touch the baseball more often.
All right, as to full transparency, in the case you're listening to the radio show version of this, Christian Walker was hit in the hand, but he's staying in the game as we're recording this podcast. But how do you feel about Christian Walker right now? What we've seen from his offensive, I wouldn't say turnaround, but recent stretch where it seems much improved.
I like Walker. I think he's a good baseball player. He didn't get off to a good start. He's a good defensive player. The offense to me is, I think it's a guy that's trying to do too much on a new team. He hasn't, I mean, the numbers, you see slippage there, and you look at, like, some of the savant numbers. Like, his chase rate's high, his whiff rate's higher, and I think it's a guy that's trying to do too much on a new team to try to make an impression. That's why I think that the walk-off home run he hit the other day, I think that's going to spark him. It's going to make him, like, at ease. It's going to make him comfortable. It's like, okay, well, I've helped this team start to win, and I think it's going to help him relax.
Yep.
And I think the moment that he starts to relax and just feels comfortable as a Houston Astro is whenever I think we see his numbers start to take off. And he has been a lot better over the last, like, month of the year. I know he had that stretch where he was, like, 0 for whatever. But the last month of the season versus the first month of the season have been night and day.
I also think it's, not to poke fun at Jose Abreu too much here, but I know it's different circumstances. Like, one was a walk-off home run versus one was just a regular season, didn't matter home run. Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget when Jose Abreu basically ripped his jersey off rounding third base at the Coliseum in celebration of his first home run, like, 3 months into the season. Where Christian Walker seemed just more like, this is what I'm supposed to do here, was hit the home run. Celebrate, yes, but reasonably. It's very positive. At the bare minimum, it's just positive to see with what he can get going. Hopefully that brings the confidence. We know he's changed some things. He changed his locker.
Yeah.
He changed the high socks. He had a mustache, then got rid of it. Do you have anything like that, Jeremy?
No.
Can I share with the audience?
It tells you a guy that's reeling.
But you don't have anything like that in your day-to-day? I used to work with someone that had to put their left sock on first every single day.
I think I do that.
But they did it intentionally.
Yeah.
Like, if they didn't put their left sock on first, it would ruin their entire day.
I don't even know how you would know. Like, I think I just do it, like, instinctually.
It's they're so OCD, I guess, is the way to put it.
I have ADHD, so I'm very...
No.
I'm very, you know, what makes you think I have ADHD?
It's the ring.
Oh yeah, I play with it. I do like routine. Like, I'm a creature of habit, but in terms of like superstition, not really. Maybe U of H stuff. Like, if we win a game, like maybe I'll wear the same like thing that I wore to the previous win, just because like, why mess with it?
That makes sense.
Yeah,
like
I do
hat,
that.
The hat or whatever you're wearing, or
no,
or the whole outfit.
No, just like the quarter zip.
Okay, that makes
the
sense.
Quarter zip that day.
Yeah, a little harder for baseball when you're playing as often, but for like a basketball.
No, baseball
game,
I don't. Baseball I don't, because baseball I usually, I mean, if we're on a road trip, then I pick out, okay, I'm wearing this Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That makes sense.
So like maybe if we win the series, then that rotation stays the same. Maybe if you lose the series, then you flip the rotation. But I haven't really done that much.
But if it's a basketball game, you're going to wear the same outfit every Tuesday, Saturday.
But that, yes. But that's also, like, I usually wear the same color of the coaching staff, and they do that too.
Okay.
So, like, I don't even know if it's really something I would do.
It's
probably would.
Part of the way it's done.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the typical Astros talk. Before we talk about the all-quarter-century team, injuries. Those are a thing, always. Dana Brown was on the flagship, says it's a matter of time when Yordan Alvarez comes back. They want this to be a one-time thing because hand injuries can last. I, as everyone else, interpreted this as very clearly. As it's up to Yordan Alvarez when he comes back to the lineup. It is not necessarily a straight medical diagnosis of why he is or is not back. It's a comfort thing. It's a feel thing. So I guess we'll see him back at some point.
I mean, they're throwing him under the bus.
I think so too.
Like, I mean, how could you view it any differently? Or maybe the people are going to hear throw him under the bus and be like, oh, that's a negative connotation.
I
don't like that.
I think it's saying that the medical staff is saying physically there's nothing wrong with him from coming back right now, but we can't tell you what the pain or, you know, annoyances that he feels within his hand right now.
Yeah.
We can't disagree with them because we don't feel it at a minimum.
I mean, Espada said the same thing.
Yeah.
Ahead of their game on Tuesday against the A's. Like, and look, maybe throwing him under the bus is too negative for people, and other people aren't going to like hearing that. But at the very minimum, they're putting the ball on Yordan's court. Okay, Yordan, like the training staff has checked you off. Like, we've seen you run around the diamond. And try to get baseball activities in. That's checked off. We've seen you hit in the cages. Like, that is checked off. There's only, like, I'm sure that they've done imaging. I know they came out at first and they said they're not doing imaging. And then they sent him home. We presume that he got imaging. I don't think they've ever been on record of saying that, but it feels like an obvious thing to do. So, like, there's nothing structurally wrong. So, hey, yeah, when Yordan says that he's ready to play baseball, then Yordan Alvarez is ready to play baseball. At the very minimum, they've put the ball on Yordan's court to come to the ballpark and say, okay, I'm ready.
And who knows when that's going to be. Like, it could be by the time you're listening to the show. It could be back. Like, it could be a week from now. It feels like we have no real resolution to on when Yordan Alvarez will actually return to this lineup. I'm sure you guys have or will discuss this on the Killer Bees if you have not already, because I saw you tweet about it. Where do you want Yordan Alvarez to bat when he returns?
Fourth.
To the lineup. Okay.
I've wanted Yordan Alvarez to bat fourth all season. Like, going back to spring training, going back to whenever he was injured. I can't remember. I don't know if I wanted Pena in the top of the lineup in spring training. But then after he got hot, I was like, yeah, you might as well just use Pena at the top of the order. It's working. Like, do all of that. I prefer Altuve in the three spot. I think he's a more natural three-hole hitter. He's going off right now from the three-hole. He won the MVP from the three-hole. He's not a leadoff guy. Like, that the whole, like, you know, they want to give him more time coming in from left field to get ready for his first at-bat. Maybe it was true. I don't know. But he's not a natural leadoff guy. Like, he doesn't see pitches. He swings a lot. He doesn't walk much. He's not a traditional leadoff man. He's a good enough hitter to where it doesn't matter because it's Jose Altuve. You can bat him wherever in the lineup you want him to. But I think you go back to the Astros' lack of productivity with runners in scoring position and, you know, their offensive metrics, even now. Like, okay, their OPS is up here relative to the rest of baseball. Their average is up here relative to the rest of baseball. But their runs are down here. Why? I think there's feng shui in baseball. I think the batting order is significant for a reason. The way it ebbs and flows and, You know, I do think that is something that matters. I think it's substantial. Analytical people will say, no, not really. It's random. Like, just stack your best hitters at the top of the lineup. I disagree. I think there's hitter personalities where hitters hit better at the top, hitters hit better in the middle, hitters hit better at the bottom. Mm. I think you can look at three examples with the Astros. I think Peña is a table setter. I think Yordan Alvarez is the middle of the order, table clear. And I think Jake Myers is a bottom of the order guy. Mm-hmm. Like, low stress, he thrives in that spot. You don't want him in the middle. You don't want him at the top. And I think the pressure gets to him a little bit. So I want him to bat fourth. Stack the three guys in front of him with guys who get on base. Peña does that. Isak does that. Altuve gets on base enough and then, you know, can slug a little bit too from that three spot. And then you let Yordan knock all those guys in. I think it's the best for him. And, in fact, if you look at Yordan's numbers, his best numbers are whenever he's batting fourth of the top four spots in the order. So
yeah, it's interesting.
Put him, like, in a spot where he likes to hit.
We talked about this last week. Like, if you look at the numbers, you can always pick and choose. But Christian Walker is a great example of this. When he hits, third in the lineup, he's dreadful. This season, mm-hmm. when he's hitting fourth or fifth, it's much better. I think it should be Peña, Paredes, Altuve, Alvarez, Christian Walker mm-hmm. are your top five guys.
Yeah.
1 through 5, you're deep. They can all do a little bit of everything differently. You've got two guys in there that are really good at taking long at-bats, and Walker and Paredes. You have Altuve, who could be a mixed bag of both. He might attack the first swing. He might play out a good count. Same thing with Yordan Alvarez. Like, I think that's 1 through 5, the best thing the Astros can put out right now, as soon as Yordan Alvarez gets back. I also don't really care if he does, you know, any rehab at this point in Sugarland. Yeah. Like, it's just, he's Yordan Alvarez. If he's ready to go, he can come up in the bigs. I know 2 years ago, we were all at the Space Cowboys game when he was doing a rehab assignment. I don't think he needs to do that right now. You can just bring him back up and put him in the big league roster at this point in the season when he's ready to go. The other injury updates we got here, Ronald Blanco officially having elbow surgery. They didn't technically call it Tommy John, the Astros. I think that just means when they open up the elbow, they'll confirm the Tommy John when they see it, and they'll give him Tommy John. He'll be back supposedly in 2026.
Yeah. Yeah. I think McTaggart has updated it recently where it is indeed the Tommy John. But you're right. The way that they phrased it was like, oh, he's having elbow surgery. Well, which one? The Astros, mysterious as always, didn't say in their initial release. I think the beat writers had it later, like way after the fact, that it was indeed Tommy John, which. Like, I think we all kind of saw that coming. Like, the internal brace has been an option for some. Was it Strider who had the internal brace?
I think it was.
I don't remember. Yeah. You see it more in football, the internal brace. Like, Brock Purdy had the internal brace. Mm-hmm. Lance has an internal brace. Lance McCullers has an internal brace, Tommy John, and flexor tendon surgery.
It's a lot.
Yeah, he's got a bionic arm.
Got quite a bit.
So, yeah, I mean, it stinks, but I think we all knew that whenever it came out that he had the sore elbow, and then the second opinion. Okay, well, why do you get a second opinion? Because you don't like the first opinion. So the news was official, but it's something we all saw coming. Yeah. I mean, the Astros, like, I don't think that their rotation is dependent on Ronald Blanco. Like, it's dependent on Hunter Brown. It's dependent on Framber Valdez. But you're kind of running out of options. Like, you have, I mean, unless we're counting Jamie Moyer, the Brandon Walton, as a, like, actual reliable big league starter. I don't think Blue Ball is a reliable starter at this stage of his career. Uloa, or however you say his name, maybe eventually. But you have like five guys, and that counts Gordon and Gusto. Mm-hmm. So I think you can survive Blanco. I'm not sure that you can survive another starting pitcher injury.
Yeah, it's to the point where I do wonder if you start to look at what's going on in Baltimore, for example, a season that is unraveled in a major way. I mean, as we record this, they're 19-35. They're 15 games out of the AL East. They're not winning crap this year. Like, do you call them and start seeing if a Zach Eflin or someone like that is available right now and try to be ultra aggressive? You know, the White Sox are going nowhere. The Marlins, the Pirates, the Rockies. Like, is there anyone in any of those rotations that might even just be like a super cheap just arm to get you to the deadline? I think it might be time, honestly, to start making some calls at this point in the season, just to try to get a backup plan. Because as you're saying, Jeremy, like, I don't think they really have anything else. You've kind of exhausted your backup plans. That's what it feels like the Astros have done, unfortunately, in the last, what, two seasons? Three seasons, including this one, where they've just had so many injuries that they've been able to withstand. But how much more can you withstand? Can you, you know, even if, let's say it was Lance McCullers or Gusto or any of these guys, are there other guys in the minors right now that you trust to bring up?
No, I think those are the three.
No, I mean, I don't think we're not far from, if you're not trading for someone, you might be looking at bullpen games.
Yeah, I don't think it's time yet. We also forgot Arrigetti. Like,
yes, update on Arrigetti is he'll be out of the soft cast. Joe Espada said that he was throwing. Again, the GM and the manager have no idea what's going on with their team. Danit Brown said that he'll be out of the soft cast and start throwing soon. Joe Espada said he was throwing, at least playing catch. Those to me are different things.
They know what's going on. They're just telling you what they want to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know why they tell the media different things.
Yeah, if you're going to lie, you should probably get on the same page.
Yeah, they don't do that. They just don't do that. Like, hey, I don't understand. Like, I think it's straight. I think it makes Danit Brown look bad when he says something that, like,
I don't actually. Like, the reason that I don't is because we've gotten so much lip service that whatever they say is minutia, it doesn't matter. You know, like, you don't put any weight in it anymore because of how much minutia it is.
Yeah.
So, like, whatever they tell you, like, the sky is green. Okay, well, I know you lie to me all the time, so the sky is probably not green. Which, when they tell you the sky is blue, it's like, well, you lie to me all the time. I don't think the sky is blue.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if it makes them look bad. Like, I don't think you can look worse when it comes to a public relations point of view. I think they've reached optimal worseness, and you can't, it doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah, I just think it's strange that, like, one does an interview with, like, the flagship radio station, says he's about to be out of his soft cast, he's going to start throwing again, and then the manager's like, yeah, he's playing catch. Like, I just don't get it. Like, how are you? Because it comes off, I don't think that to me doesn't come off as lying.
Can I play devil's advocate and, like, defend them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, as their advocate?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a soft cast. You can take off a soft cast.
And I guess you can play catch.
Yeah, so maybe maybe they are telling you the truth. Maybe Danit Brown says he's not out of a soft cast yet.
He means throwing.
But Espada says, well, he's taking it off every now and then and throwing.
Yeah, you're right.
So it could technically be the truth.
That's a point for devil's advocate Jeremy Branham here.
And Dana's trying to be a little bit more, like, you know, tight-lipped because he's gotten in trouble in the past to be loose-lipped. And Espada, knowing that the organization has a reputation of lying, is trying to be as transparent and as honest with the media as he can be.
That's true.
I do think Espada is transparent. Like, Espada will be guarded whenever he doesn't want to tell you something, but I don't think if we caught Espada in a lie?
Not really.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that Danit Brown lies as much as Danit Brown just kind of exaggerates the truth and, like, talks a lot. Mm-hmm. But I have noticed him start to do it less. Like, oh, Kyle Tucker's going to be here forever. Oh, Spencer Arrigetti's going to Rookie of the Year. Oh, Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers are going to be back in the summer of 2024. Although he did say the other day that Luis Garcia and Christian Javier are going to be back in the summer of 2025. So,
yeah, he said again today or on Wednesday, late July, early August for Luis Garcia.
I mean,
I guess I'm still confused on what happened.
Yeah, I have a theory.
What's your theory?
I don't know, that makes me look like a jerk.
Is that all you're going to give me?
I mean, I already talked about it. I don't think Luis Garcia has taken his rehab seriously.
Oh, your tweet?
We've had
Chunky.
He does.
Well, it's not the first time.
And if anybody knows Chunky, it's me. I know what a little bit of chunk looks like because I live it. No, he looks a little heavy to me. And we've also had texters text us in pictures of Luis Garcia partying.
Oh, interesting.
And, like, not only partying, but whenever there's pictures of him, he's, like, putting his hand up because he doesn't want to be photographed. So it's like, not only is he partying, because, I mean, he can party. Who cares? He's an adult, but he's embarrassed by his partying.
Well,
why would you be embarrassed by your partying? Because you don't want people to know you're partying. Why do you care if people think you're partying? Because you're not doing other things professionally.
Yeah, it is weird because we haven't got a substantial update for an injury, at least, like, with Lance McCullers. Like, we knew he got re-hurt. With Luis Garcia, we know he got re-hurt last year.
I don't know if he did.
Yeah, we just don't know. Like,
he felt tightness.
Yeah, it's been weird.
Like, and when do you feel inflammation? When you're heavy.
I assumed he had was getting another Tommy John at this point. So that's why, like, when I had heard, like, a late July, early August, I was more confused. I thought we were talking more about next year with him because I assumed it was a Tommy John. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila about what night harvesting tequila is really all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, before we wrap up, Jeremy, Chandler Rome put out on The Athletic his all-quarter-century Houston Astros team. Now, he cheated. There's no question about it. He cheated on this list.
What do you mean he cheated?
His left fielder is Jose Altuve. That's cheating, Chandler. Yeah, I appreciate cheating. It, but it's cheating. It was a cop-out from a tough decision.
That's like when people put Biggio on their all-time teams at catcher.
Yes. Well, that's because he's got Biggio at second base. So his first baseman is Lance Berkman. There's no dispute there. It's Lance over Yuli. I don't think there's even anyone else in the conversation, correct?
I mean, if you're arguing, you know, Jose Abreu?
No, probably not.
If you're arguing championships.
I think this is more about the player. And look, Yuli was a great player, but Lance Berkman's obviously an extra great player since the year 2000, is the best way to put it. So I think Lance there. So he's got Craig Biggio at second base.
That is interesting.
Let's remove Jose Altuve, the left fielder here. If you had to choose all quarter century team, Craig Biggio at second base, Jose Altuve second base.
Oh, it's Altuve.
Totally agree.
It's not even close.
Yeah, and look.
Biggio is my favorite player growing up. It's not close.
Yeah. I mean, he had a 95 OPS from 2000 to 2007. This is obviously not the best years of Craig Biggio's career. He got to 3,000 hits during this time, but it's Jose Altuve.
He was 34 in 2000. Like, yeah. He's almost, he was then what almost Altuve is now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's Jose Altuve.
It's not insulting.
It's not even close. Like, yeah, it's nothing against Craig Biggio. I mean, Jose Altuve to me is the greatest Houston Astro of all time.
I would agree. I mean, you can make a case that Jose Altuve is top three offensive second baseman in the history of the game. I mean, you absolutely could.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure who would the people who would argue against it would be the people who bring up the trash cans, of course.
Sure.
But that's their only real argument. But but even if you remove those, you know, what we call it, two seasons, you still have one of the best second basemen ever.
And he also, there's evidence, too, that he was
didn't
not one
it.
Of the users.
Shortstop, Carlos Correa, all quarter century team. Any dispute with that?
I mean, you're kind of, 2025, Pena's not close to Correa. Tim Bogar wasn't anywhere. No. No, there's no one near Carlos Correa.
Same thing with Alex Bregman at third base.
I can't think of, Vinny Castilla had great hair, but I think that was pre-2000.
All right. Yeah, I figure the infield would be pretty cut and dry, besides Biggio. And I think that's pretty cut and dry. I think it's Jose Altuve. Catcher. Chandler selects Jason Castro as the all-quarter-century catcher for the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
So your candidates are Jason Castro, Martin Maldonado. Yiner hasn't done enough, obviously, to even be in the conversation, really.
Yeah, I would have to go back and look at the numbers. I intentionally didn't look at this because I didn't want my – I was going to do this for our show.
Sorry.
And I didn't want to cloud my judgment with it. So thank you, Joe. So I'd have to go back and dive into the numbers. But Castro, I know that the Astros were terrible, but he was an all-star. Now, he was like a lone representative all-star.
Yes, so by default.
So I do put an asterisk next to that. But he had some really good years. I mean, he was a good player on a bad team. You know, Brian McCann wasn't here for a long time, but I think Brian McCann's leadership and just being a veteran was a big deal for the Astros whenever they won it all in 2017. They brought a championship here. So, I wonder where McCann's numbers stack up to Castro's numbers. McCann obviously was here shorter, but was here for a more significant period of time. So, it depends on what you're valuing here. Like, if you're just going raw numbers, individual, war value and stuff like that, yeah, it's probably Castro. But if you're going, if you're going more based on, this guy brought me a championship, which is fair. I have a championship bias. That's one of the reasons I think Jose Altuve is easily the greatest Astro ever. I mean, Bagwell's numbers in the conversation, Biggio's numbers in the conversation, but Altuve's brought the city to parades, where Bagwell and Biggio did not. So it usually, for me, whenever we're talking about all-time great conversations, if it's in the same conversation numbers and you have a championship over the other guys in the conversation, I give you a boost because you've won the title. So anything that's close to breaking a tie, give me the championship guy.
No, Castro does have a championship.
Yeah, pinch hitter, though. So, like, what was their role when the championship was won?
So he's got the most WAR since 2000 of any catcher.
I figured he would.
He's got a championship later on. He's got the All-Star game.
See, you throw in the championship thing. You can be the 12th. Like, Scotty Brooks has a championship with the Rockets.
That's true.
He wasn't as valuable to that team as Akeem Olajuwon was.
So, like,
even the championship ring has a sliding scale based on the value you're bringing to that team. If I was the 25th man on the team that won the World Series in 2017, I promise you I would not have had any influence on winning that title.
That's
so true. How much you factored into winning that title has to come into play.
No, I think the championship does matter. I think we're pretty aligned with it that champions have to count for something. And look, the Astros era is very interesting. We talk about a quarter century. You've got a team that's pretty good early on, first, what, 6-7 years? A team that's either mediocre or the worst team in baseball for the next basically decade.
Yeah.
And then the best team in the American League for the next decade after that. It's very different sections of this quarter century of where you fit in. Obviously, Jason Castro is going to be the only person on this list,
you know,
besides Jose Altuve, that fits into that middle era of being on the worst teams in baseball, really. Because even Springer and those guys who we'll talk about here, or Bregman and Correa, they were mostly here for the good. Uh-huh. Altuve and Castro were really the only guys on this list who were there for the dreads.
Yeah, and that was probably a pretty short time. I'm wondering, too, this thought just came to me. Craig Biggio has played more outfield games this quarter century than Jose Altuve. Because it reminded me those early 2000 teams had Jeff Kent.
Yeah.
So they moved Biggio to the outfield. So I just pulled it up. Biggio, this quarter century, let's see, he played 150 games in the outfield in 03. He played 149 games in the outfield in 04. And then he moved back to second base. So, I mean, that's like, what, 300 games? Altuve's probably played, what, 50? So Biggio's played 6 times as many games in the outfield than Altuve has. Like, if you're going
to
make one of those guys an outfielder,
it's
very clearly Biggio.
I agree.
And Biggio might, like, if we're going just strictly this quarter century, so it's 2000, 2025, he probably has more games at second base than does the outfield, but it's a much closer gap than Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
Biggio's the left fielder, not Altuve. That's my biggest beef with this quarter century team.
I do agree with
you. You can actually move Biggio to left field. Like that, because he played a lot of games, played 2 full seasons there.
Is that where he played again?
Biggio played center field in 03,
okay.
And then he moved to left field whenever they acquired Beltran. They moved to left field whenever they acquired Beltran.
So would you put Chandler's left fielder is Jose Altuve here? So would you just put Biggio there instead?
Yeah, give me Biggio. I have to go look at the numbers, but Biggio makes more sense in left field than Altuve does.
So, or is there an argument because of championships, because of success, that Jose Altuve should be the second baseman on this team, and Michael Brantley should be the left fielder on this team?
I'd go Biggio over Brantley.
Because the
Brantley can have a spot
great,
on my bench.
Right?
He can be my left-hand bat on the bench.
Did
Chandler have a bench, guys?
He did.
He's went starting lineup. Did he
starting
have a DH?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay. Center field, George Springer, no question about it for me. Right field. Yeah.
Beltran was pretty dang good, but he wasn't here long enough, didn't win titles.
Yeah. Right field, Kyle Tucker. Don't think there's any question about that either.
Probably not.
I don't think there would.
Hidalgo had some really good years,
mm-hmm.
early 2000s, but not. I mean, he went to the playoffs a couple times too, and there was thoughts that it might have been enhanced. I didn't say that.
Put air quotes up.
I mean, Hidalgo's numbers were really good, but yeah, I probably have to go talk.
DH, he chose Jeff Bagwell.
You know who else was really good, but wasn't here for a long time? Was Moises Alou, but that might have been late 2000s.
P hands.
So what?
I just remember that.
Give me hits. I don't care what you're doing with your hands.
I just remember my dad. growing up. Yes, yeah, my dad said, don't shake his hand if he signs an autograph for you.
He was here 4 years, Alou, and his first 2 years were not this quarter century. And then his last 2 years were.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to qualify for this list for only 2 years.
Two top 20 MVP voting years.
Yeah.
He had 355 and 20, 331 and 21.
He was so
He was
good.
A stud.
Yeah, I feel like he's so underrated.
Like, how do you finish 20th in MVP voting whenever you, I mean, he only played 125 games, but he had 355 and an OPS over 1,000, 30 homers, 114 RBIs, and was 20th.
P-hand bias.
Huh?
P-hand bias.
It's the reason is not P-hand bias. Reason does start with a P, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Performance?
Uh-huh.
Enhancing?
Yes.
Yes. DH Jeff Bagwell. Any dispute on this? About should it be?
He spent many of his games at DH.
Yes, I think this is
so
kind
is
of
just
a fitting.
Spitty, like putting a hitter there?
Yes. So it's basically, is it Bagwell or is it Yordan Alvarez? Who is left off of this group then?
I mean.
That's where like this is complicated. Like of all the guys, like if you were going to read, if I was going to say who should be left off, Jose Altuve at second base. You put Yordan in left and Bagwell at DH, yeah. And leave off Biggio, or do you leave off Bagwell?
I mean, if Chandler's just putting guys at random positions because they played a few games there, and move Biggio to catcher. Well, Biggio didn't play catcher in the 20th century. He couldn't do that. Couldn't do that because his catcher days came in the previous century.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's tough. Bagwell's raw numbers are probably better than mm-hmm. Yordan's. But how do you leave Yordan off of this list?
I don't know. Like, I mean, if you're going to say, now, in defense of Chandler here, so as I'm reading through this again, he put right field Kyle Tucker. This is how he starts the blurb here. Three players made sense for the spot. Tucker, Hidalgo, and Yordan.
So he did bridge in.
So he was looking at just the outfield
I mean,
spot.
Yordan never played right.
So he's just thinking, almost in the All-Star game kind of voting system of just
he's
selecting three
liberties.
Outfielders. He is taking some liberties.
Taking some massive liberties.
So real
here.
Quick here, because we got to wrap up and get here to the pitching staff before we wrap up. If you do Tucker or Yordan, which one do you take?
I'd probably go Yordan.
I think so, too. I go Yordan, specifically because Tucker chokes in the playoffs.
Like, if you just eliminate the raw numbers and who has been who's been a bigger factor to this organization in this quarter century,
mm-hmm.
The answer is not Tucker.
It's Yordan.
I mean, Yordan has been far more important to this organization. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Tucker's going to have the counting stats, plays more games, puts up numbers.
But Yordan
but
Yordan's
been more valuable.
100% more valuable.
But I can't play him in right.
Closer, Ryan Pressly.
I have no objection there. Pressly was really dang good. I know the last 2 years didn't go the way that we wanted. Once they acquired Hader, I mean, the writing was on the wall, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pressly, even if you didn't bring in Hader, Pressly's still going to have a fallout.
For sure.
So I have no argument there, though. Pressly was pretty dominant in his glory days as an Astro.
Yeah, and Chandler says picking between Pressly and Brad Lidge is almost impossible. I think being on the out there for winning a World Series.
Yeah, I mean Pressly won a World Series, and then Lidge gave up the most catastrophic home run against you in franchise history. So I think it's a pretty easy tiebreaker.
Yeah. Starting rotation. This actually will help your Moises Alou argument, even though I know we don't have time for it today, because he has Garrett Cole on this list. Starting rotation, Justin Verlander, Roy Oswalt, Garrett Cole, Dallas Keuchel, Roger Clemens. This is five-man rotation.
Roy O, Justin Verlander, Cole, Keuchel, Clemens. It's hard to go away from that. Verlander
I don't think
won
there's
a
anyone
Cy
else.
Young. Cole could have won a Cy Young. Keuchel
yep.
did. Clemens did. Roy O has the most wins in program history, franchise history, I think with 144. It's hard to argue that. I'd have to. I couldn't give you a better name.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy one.
The one you would take off, I think, in theory, would be Keuchel, just offhand. But like,
I mean, he was.
I guess maybe Garrett Cole because it was only a season
two.
Or two and a half seasons.
Two seasons, but it was dominant.
But he was elite. He was one of the two best pitchers in baseball, basically, and the other one was on your staff.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know how you argue any of those guys to be removed from this list. I think it's pretty cut and dry, to be honest. I don't think anyone.
I wonder if you could give an argument. Not that I'm making the argument, but if you could give an argument to Fromber.
I think there would be an argument for
because
Fromber. I think for longevity, you could argue Fromber over Cole.
But if I'm arguing somebody, I'd probably argue for Keuchel. Because
Fromber over Keuchel?
Here's a question. Who's the greatest left-handed pitcher in Astro history? Are you going Keuchel or are you going Fromber? They've both been on World Series teams.
They both have. One has a Cy Young, one does not.
That's what Fromber does not have.
Yeah, so that's probably why
I But Fromber, Keuchel. I think, has a longer stretch of being good.
I agree.
Keuchel's peak was really good, but probably had, what, 3 years?
Yeah, but it was a great peak.
Sure, but Fromber's peak has been great, too. He just lacks the Cy Young.
Did Dallas Keuchel ever call off his catcher?
I'm sure. I mean, Keuchel blasted his general manager, which a lot of people praise because it got him Verlander.
It did get them Justin Verlander, which probably means Keuchel belongs on this list for that reason.
Keuchel has 76 wins as a Houston Astro. Like, Fromber's above 76, right?
He's got to be.
Fromber's a 72.
Oh, well, he'll be by the end of the season. So, all right, that will do it for this episode of Inside the Icebox, brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. You can find more out at BlueStarTequila.com. He's Jeremy Branham. I'm Joe George. We'll be back next week. Move to Fridays starting next week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you then. Peace.